Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Chris Whittingham, Brian Monroe here on 560 WQAM here until 6 o'clock tonight. Lots to get to in the realm of the NBA, and we'll discuss a majority of it right now with Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. Kind of to join us here on WQAM. Rohan, appreciate the time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
And repping the 954 here and abroad. So we very much appreciate it. So going into free agency, and I was actually on with Brian right before free agency started on Sunday, and I was making the case pretty strongly that the Heat were not going to be able to do anything as it relates to Jimmy Butler because they're over the luxury tax, much less a salary cap. What did you make of the fact that the Heat managed to pull this off and get Jimmy Butler in?
I mean, it was pretty crazy. I was with you guys. I was really skeptical. Obviously, we've seen the reports, but I was pretty skeptical that they could pull it off. I think what's interesting about this summer, and it's obviously not just Jimmy, is just the sign-and-trade coming back into the NBA. I don't think anyone expected that going into this offseason. We hadn't seen a sign-and-trade since 2017. Now we're just seeing a slew of them this summer. So I think what's happened is every time a new CBA is signed, there's always these unintended consequences, right? And I think GMs have kind of figured out how to navigate sign-and-trades again, which helps a team like the Heat, who we all know have been capped out and had these bad contracts and whatnot. So I think they're in a good spot. It helps that I think Jimmy wanted to get his way to Miami, and the Sixers, I think, kind of wanted to move on from him. So it was just kind of a perfect storm of events. But, I mean, it's good for Heat managers. Listen, I think if they had gone into the summer and got rid of Whiteside, it would have been a win. Coming out with Jimmy Butler is a pretty good for them.
For sure, and the fact that you managed to do both at the same time, I think, caught a lot of Heat fans by surprise. But the other part of this that I guess is confusing to some on the national scale, and maybe not as much here because we sort of understand what the Miami Heat organization has to offer, but people are going, wait a second, Jimmy Butler wants to win. Why didn't he want to stay in Philadelphia? There's some confusion as to the decision. Did you agree with that sort of skepticism, or do you understand why Jimmy Butler made this move and ultimately why he wanted to be a member of the Miami Heat?
I mean, I think we're gonna learn more about Jimmy's time in Philadelphia, I think, in the coming months, to be honest. I understand it from both sides. I mean, I think Jimmy Butler wants to win, but he wants to win on his terms, and I think Miami gives him an opportunity to do that. I think he trusts the front office to put pieces around him. There have been all kinds of stories, and you hear other people talk about it on podcasts and stuff. Did Jimmy get along with some of the younger guys in Philadelphia? Was it right for him to be on the timeline that they are on where, you know, Ben Simmons is a younger player. Jimmy Butler demands kind of a certain level of commitment. And whether that's fair or not, I mean, he's run into problems in three different teams now, I think. But I don't think the Heat automatically means he's never going to win. I just think he wants an opportunity to win on his terms. And I think Miami gives him a better opportunity than Philadelphia. Whether the Heat will be more successful, I think that remains to be seen. But I think it gives him that chance that he wants.
Yeah, I think we all think that to be successful, you got to add a couple more pieces. And you hear the rumblings of DeMarcus Cousins. You hear Bradley Beal. You know, do you think that Pat Riley would be able to pull off another sign and trade or move some more pieces to get a Bradley Beal or DeMarcus Cousins to come down?
I wouldn't get my hopes up for something like that. I understand people are kind of have this invincible feeling right now. Anything is possible. We just got Jimmy Butler. Why not Bradley Beal? I think it would be a huge mistake if the Heat took on John Wall's contract. I think what you need is a similar situation maybe a year from now, maybe a few months from now, where Bradley Beal wants out of his contract, wants to force his way to Miami, and then maybe you could pull off a trade for him. But I think doing it this summer, getting caught up in the excitement, taking on John Wall's contract, giving up an asset like Justice or Bam, I think that would be a mistake. So I wouldn't get my hopes up for Bradley Beal just yet. I don't think, frankly, Beal hasn't made a strong case for himself to want out of Washington. I think he does have an emotional connection to that team, so I just don't see Bradley Beal happening. I do think the Heat are going to be active and try to move off some of these other contracts, but Beal would be a big surprise to me.
Can you explain for the audience, we're joined here by Ryan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated, can you explain why the John Wall, because I think people will hear, wait, I'm getting John Wall 2 and Brad Beal, why wouldn't I want that? And I think a lot of fans don't understand just how disastrous John Wall's contract extension is.
I mean, the John Wall contract is terrible for a lot of reasons. First of all, he's a guy, I like John Wall a lot as a player. I wanted him to work out, but his flaws kind of came to the forefront the last couple of years in Washington. I don't think he has a great reputation as a leader. Unfortunately, again, I really like him as a player. He wasn't able to lead that team to a lot of success in the postseason, even though, you know, he did play well in a lot of those series. But, I mean, you look at his contract right now, 4 years, over $140 million left. He's just going to take up so much space in the salary cap, and you can't afford to pay a player like him as much money as you are if he isn't going to deliver you consistent success, and he hasn't proven that. And that isn't even getting into, he is coming off two huge injuries. I mean, he had surgery on his knee, and then he tore his Achilles after that. I mean, coming back from a back-to-back series of injuries like that is incredibly difficult. I don't want to take a chance. I mean, it's one thing to take a chance on someone like Kevin Durant coming off an Achilles injury, but there are even questions about him. Taking a chance on John Wall, a player who relies so much on his athleticism, doesn't have a consistent jump shot. Now he's coming off an Achilles injury, and he's going to play the most loaded position in the league. That is just a gigantic risk that there's no reason the Heat should be taking a risk like that on a player like John Wall at this point in his career. And it pains me to say that because I like him as a player. I'm not trying to, you know, insult John Wall, but that would be poor management to take a risk on him at this point in his career.
Now, we don't know yet where Kawhi is going, but presuming that everything else stays relatively the same, even if it goes back to Toronto, where do you see the Heat in the context of the Eastern Conference just with this one move alone, even if that's all they do, by losing Josh Richardson and Whiteside and adding Jimmy Butler? How much have they actually improved? They were a non-playoff team a year ago, fighting in that Orlando-Brooklyn area of the conference. You know, Brooklyn's going to take a leap, but do you see them getting maybe up to the 5-6 range? Where do you see them in the conference of the in the context of the East?
I think they're going to be in that tier right below, you know, the Bucks, Raptors, you know, maybe the Celtics now, the Sixers. I think the Heat are going to be in the tier right below that. I do think the 5-60 is the right area for them. You know, Brooklyn is going to take a somewhat of a leap next year, but I don't think Brooklyn is going to be wildly better next season than they were this season. I still think Brooklyn's ceiling is a second-round team. I'm not enamored by the Magic. I know they obviously had a very good season for them last year. I don't know if that means they're set up for consistent success there. I think the Heat are going to be right there, you know, kind of back in that 5-6 range, kind of where they were, you know, those last years of Dwayne Wade before he left for Chicago. I think they're going to be right in that group. And I think they're going to be competitive. I do think their ceiling is probably a second round. A conference finals would be, you know, an amazing season for the Heat. But I do think they'll be in the mix to kind of maybe push for a second round. It's going to help Spoh a lot to kind of have a scorer in his prime. I mean, he hasn't had that since the Big Three disbanded. And he's been able to make, you know, some pretty compelling offenses out of the rosters he's had. I think it's going to be – what I'm most concerned about the Heat, I think they might be a team that's better in the playoffs than the regular season. I love Spoh. I think the criticism of his is sometimes he takes a while to nail down the rotation. And, again, he's going to, again, have a lot of moving pieces. How does he configure Justice, Gorin, you know, Deion Waiters and Jimmy on the perimeter? How does he figure out who's going to handle the ball? I think that's going to take him some time. I think they're going to improve as the season goes along. But I think their ceiling is a second round right now.
Joined by Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. So beyond what the Heat did, what in NBA free agency has most interested you so far? Obviously, the Kawhi thing is still withstanding, but in terms of the rest of it, you know, obviously the Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant move, but even beyond that, what for you has most grabbed your attention so far in free agency?
I think just how many teams are kind of getting in the mix here. I think we're going to have so many good teams in the NBA next season, and I'm really excited just as a fan and someone who is watching league pass every night. There's going to be a lot of good teams. I mean, there's teams that didn't even get involved in free agency, like the Houston Rockets and the Denver Nuggets, who are going to be very good next season. And then you look just the breadth of good teams in the league right now, the Lakers, the Jazz, you know, the Celtics with Kemba Walker, the Sixers are going to be really good again. The Bucks, you know, brought their core back. The Heat made a move. I mean, there's just going to be so many teams that are relevant next season. I think that's what excites me and interests me as someone who follows the NBA, that what we've seen this summer is a spreading of the wealth, and I think it's going to be the first time in maybe, you know, something like 10 years where we just don't have a clear-cut final favorite in each conference. I think it's just going to be wide open around the league. And that's what interests me. That's what excites me, is just how wide open things are right now after free agency.
Unless, right, unless
Kawhi watch goes
unless
differently.
Unless Kawhi Leonard goes to the Lakers, then we're right back to where we started, even with the Warriors. It might even arguably be, would it be just as bad as the Warriors, if not worse, just because, I mean, the strength of those guys individually, okay, as a collective, Golden State was incredible, but individually, that is almost more star talent than the Golden State Warriors had, which is incredible to say.
It is crazy. Here's what I'll say about Kawhi to the Lakers. I think Kawhi going to the Lakers, that team would be closer to the 2010 Heat than the 2016 Warriors.
Mm.
You know, I think they're obviously going to be loaded. They're going to have more top-end talent, but it's going to be so difficult for them to fill out their roster. Who's their starting shooting guard? Is it Troy Daniels? Can you play Kyle Kuzma, Anthony Davis, LeBron, and Kawhi together? Who's going to guard point guards? I do think that team is obviously going to be very good, but I don't think they're going to be the kind of runaway favorite the Warriors were. I do think they're going to be beatable, especially in this first year. You know, there's no great free agents left on the board. They're going to have a tough time finding the role players to fit around those guys, and the roster construction, I think, is going to be a little bit awkward. And I think, I will say, I think writers obsess about that more than general managers. You know, general managers want to get the top-end talent in there and figure it out. So it's going to be interesting, but I do think the Lakers aren't going to be the runaway favorites the Warriors were. I think they're going to be a little bit closer that first year of the Big Three in Miami, where we said, how is anyone going to beat these guys? And it was a little tricky for them. So even if Kawhi goes to the Lakers, I still think there are going to be a lot of good teams in the league. They're going to be the favorite, but I don't think it's going to be as big of a gap as the Warriors have been over the last few years.
But I understand what you're saying, and certainly we saw Carlos Arroyo and Zydrunas Ilgauskas and, you know, Mike Bibby was welcomed with open arms because, oh my God, we got Mike Bibby in that 2010-11 season, and we were devastated because Troy Murphy didn't sign. I mean, there were any number of things that happened in that 2010-11 season that proves your point. But I just don't think in the history of the NBA there's been a collection of three guys who legitimately – so I think that there are usually at any one time in the NBA six or seven real difference makers where if you start your team with that guy, you can win the championship. And I think at one time in the NBA, there will be three of those six or seven guys on the same team. I don't think we've ever had more than two on the same team. This, just as a collection of leading men on the same team. And look, maybe that bus heads, and certainly beyond a team-building standpoint, there's a chemistry standpoint of it too. But from an individual talent standpoint, I can't imagine there's been a group of guys like that in the history of the NBA.
Yeah, I don't know that I would disagree. I do think it would probably be the best top three of all time. I definitely would agree with that. You know, obviously, again, it's kind of that 4-8 where it, mm-hmm. they could get tricky, but I'm with you there. I do think their top three would probably be the best top three of all time. I do wonder how their impact would get muted by playing with one another. You know, Anthony Davis is already going to get way less touches playing next to LeBron. How are LeBron and Kawhi going to work it out, you know, if it were to happen? But I do agree. On an individual level, those three guys together, I'm with you there. I don't know that there's a better top three of all time than those three together.
We're joined here by Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. Now, of those teams, so you mentioned all that movement in the rest of the league that you think can leave it wide open, and I agree. If Kawhi ultimately picks anywhere but the Lakers, this can be one of the best seasons we've had in a while. Who are the two or three teams that you're most interested in terms of competing for the championship that maybe, you know, is Utah is one that certainly picked up a lot of buzz for what they've done. Who are some of the one or two teams that you think are going to be elevating into that conversation that maybe we're not used to being there?
I mean, Utah's going to be in there. I'm still really high on the Denver Nuggets. I think Denver was incredible last season, and they dealt with so many injuries during the regular season that people don't really take into account, and it's incredible that they still finished second in the conference. Despite all that, I think the Nuggets are going to be really good. I think what that team was lacking more than anything was playoff experience, and they got it. You know, their guys are all going to be more experienced next year. They're all sitting on the upswing of their career. So I think the Nuggets are going to be the team that's much more seriously in the championship conversation next season than people realize and aren't really talking about. I do think the Jazz are going to make that jump. The Jazz are kind of tailor-made for the playoffs right now with that lineup with Bogdanovich at the four. Even if they don't start him during the regular season, they're going to be a really good team in the playoffs. I'm really interested to see how the Sixers are kind of made to defeat the Bucks right now. I think that's why they brought in Al Horford. They need someone to defend Giannis. So, you know, those are the teams I have my eye on. But don't sleep on the Nuggets or the Rockets. Both those teams were really, really good last year. And even if they didn't make big changes, these other teams are still trying to catch up to them to some extent.
I want to get back to something you said earlier, which is, as it relates to Jimmy Butler, the fact that there's maybe more of a story to get out in terms of what happened in Philadelphia. We know what happened in Minnesota. That played out very publicly. We know what happened in Chicago. That played out very publicly as well, where people are going, you know, it was Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade against the rest of the team. The fact that it's now three places for Jimmy Butler where it's been difficult for him to get on in a locker room is probably a warning sign for the Miami Heat. Do you think that there should be more of a concern about the fact that Jimmy Butler has not gotten on anywhere he's been?
Definitely. I think it's a concern. I mean, the Heat have shown they're able to handle personalities, right? Here's what I'll say about Jimmy to the Heat. This is the first time he's really chosen where he wants to play, right? Drafted by Chicago, traded to Minnesota, traded to Philadelphia. I think this is his first time, you know, similar to Kyrie, where he's gotten to choose where he wants to play. So the onus is on Jimmy to make it work. You know, he chose Miami. He wanted Miami. You know, show everyone why this was the location for you. But it definitely has to be a concern. It can't be something you would go. I mean, three different places where he got into arguments with teammates. I mean, you know, three is a pattern, right? I mean, you can't ignore that. You can't sweep that under the rug. It's definitely a concern. I will say, you know, if Spo was able to make it work with the attention of the big three, LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, I think he can handle Jimmy Butler. I think it helps that Jimmy is the clear-cut number one on this team. You know, in Chicago, he was on the upswing. He had to work with Derrick Rose. In Minnesota, it was Towns and Wiggins. In Philadelphia, it was Simmons and Embiid. I think it helps Jimmy a lot that he's kind of the clear-cut number one guy here, and he can set the tone. And the organization's culture seems to match what he's looking for. So I think, you know, all of those factors help a lot. He's choosing to play here. But the onus is on Jimmy to prove that he can be, you know, a good teammate, a good leader, because it's definitely concerning that it's not worked in three different places.
Right, and the fact that sort of what he's asked for his whole career in terms of the professionalism of his teammates and all that is something that you'll probably find here in Miami. But it's just, it's bizarre to me that, I mean, obviously it is celebrated, and it's just such a huge step forward for Miami that they have a star player, but at the same time you're dealing with a personality that just hasn't worked in other places. And look, I mean, people can say that about Miami and that they tend to make things work, but they wanted to get Hassan Whiteside to work, and it didn't. They struggled last year to get James Johnson and Deion Waiters back to where they were and being in shape and at full performance. So it hasn't always been perfect around here. There have been, you know, guys that have, you know, sort of come and gone through here, but Miami does well to keep it quiet. But it doesn't always work here. So that for me is a big concern, especially anointing him as the leader of the team.
Yeah, it's definitely something you can't ignore. I'm with you there. I will say, you know, I think what makes Jimmy different than those guys is he wants to win, right? I mean, and you can say what you want about him as a teammate, but, you know, in terms of Whiteside, what was it? It was effort. Like, he wasn't giving that effort every night. You can't say that about Jimmy Butler. You know, one thing about him is I think he's one of the bigger competitors in the league, and I do think the biggest thing about Jimmy is his issues with his teammates have always stemmed from that competitiveness. I think they've always stemmed from his determination. I'm not saying he's a perfect guy, but I don't think he has bad character either. I think his intentions, at least, I think are good, and his intentions are aligned with the Heat, which is, I'm pushing myself every day to win. I just expect everyone else to have that same level of commitment. I'm not saying that's necessarily fair, but I think what separates him from some of those other guys and other guys who, you know, maybe even Kyrie Irving, is I think Jimmy's intentions are very clear, and that is he's willing to do whatever it takes to win.
Ryan Nutcarney, check him out. Sports Illustrated, SI.com is where you read the work, and on Twitter, at Nutcarney as well. Appreciate the time, sir.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, that is Ryan Nutcarney joining us here on WQAM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.